This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
This is the Press Pass here on 1-9, 1450 and NHTalkRadio.com. Press Pass is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. More information, check out riverbendcmhc.org. Appreciate joining us for the show. Super Bowl 55, one of the best matchups I can remember in Super Bowl history. So you have Tom Brady, who has won six Super Bowl championships, appearing in his 10th game, and Patrick Mahomes, who has won the last Super Bowl and may one day be reviewed as being the greatest quarterback of all time. Right now, that is Tom Brady. And if Tom Brady wins his seventh Super Bowl, it's going to be pretty difficult for Mahomes to catch up with that, despite only being 25 years of age. So you have a dynasty in the making versus the greatest quarterback of all time who's looking for another ring at the age of 43. And Brady was asked a great question by Tom Curran of NBC Sports Network, a guy who got his start working in New Hampshire, the same newspaper I did, the Eagle Times. And he asked him about, do you ever, you know, think about why me? Why have I been this fortunate? Why have I been the guy that has been able to have this much success? And here is his answer.
It's a great question. I think about that quite a bit, actually. And, you know, I think just being grateful for, you know, all the blessings in my life. And I've got, you know, more than anyone could imagine. So in the end, I just try to do the best I could do, you know, with every situation. And, you understand there's a lot of people that have supported me over the time to get to this point. So I think any time you get a chance to realize your dreams, and I've been, you know, between high school, college, pro football, doing this for almost 30 years, just so appreciative of all the different people who have helped me along the way. Just so grateful for all the experiences that I had. And hopefully that, you know, I can, in my own way, give back as best I can to, you know, other people who may be looking to achieve and accomplish their dreams too. So it's a big picture approach. You know, at different times in my life, I haven't had the perspective that I've had. You know, I have a lot of perspective now just on this career. I wouldn't say on life. I think that I'm still learning from a lot of people who have more perspective on life. But from a football standpoint, you know, I think a lot of it for me is trying to give younger players the information they need to be the best they could be. So in the end, I'm just, again, just very grateful, very appreciative. And, you know, that's pretty much how I feel on a daily basis.
So going into the season, there wasn't much question about what the Buccaneers had. They had a lot of talent, particularly on the defensive side of the football, and they had some receivers that Brady could work with as well. Ronald Jones Jr. has stepped up and been a big part of the running game for them this year, but there's a question about how Bruce Arians and Brady were going to mix, and at times that relationship didn't seem to be the best, particularly early in the year, but things clicked, and now the Buccaneers certainly deserve to be in this game. Let's hear right now from Ronald Jones Jr., Buccaneers running back, about the Brady dynamic. Hey, Ronald, hope all is well with you. When Tom came in, was there kind of an instant credibility of this is where you guys are going to go, this is where you guys are headed in regards to the Super Bowl, or did you need to kind of see things through the course of the year and how they developed?
Definitely. I mean, you know, this man has been to a lot of these before, so. Definitely, we came in, we knew, you know, we had a shot, you know, and all these goals, and just taking it week by week, but we definitely knew with a leader like that and the guys that we had in place already that, you know, the sky was the limit, and, you know, here we are. So definitely spoke it into existence, and we did the things that we had to do to make it happen.
Here's wide receiver Scotty Miller on that a little bit more. Miller with that tremendous catch at the end of the first half, getting that touchdown, which put the Bucs up big before the break against the Packers in Green Bay. Hey, Scotty, hope all is well with you. Congrats on the Super Bowl. At what point, you know, in Brady's time in Tampa, did you know that this destination was a probable reality, if you will? Was it as soon as he signed? Was it the Atlanta game? At what point did you feel that this was a Super Bowl team? Did he provide that instant credibility upon signing, or did it take some time?
I think right away. We knew he had such good pieces. From every position we got on the depth chart, we pretty much got a star somewhere. So we're loaded at every position. Now we got him at the helm as our leader. You can't ask for a better leader. So I think as soon as he signed, we all knew that this was a possibility. But we knew it was going to take a lot of work, especially with the shortened offseason, with him coming in with Gronk, a bunch of new pieces. But we put in the work in every day. There's been parts of the season where it was rough, and then there's been obviously great parts as well, like right now. But we just worked through it all, and we're just happy to be at this point. But we got one more to go.
Also talked with Buccaneers center Ryan Jensen. Hey, Ryan, interested in, you know, Tom Brady's impact just basically from day one to now. Did he bring instant credibility that this was a destination that you guys could be in, or did that have to build through, you know, the course of the year?
You know, you play the games for a reason, but with Tom, you know, there's that sense of confidence of success that he has built over the years. And then you bring him to a team where, you know, even last year, I felt like we were close, if we would have cleaned some stuff up, of being a top contending team. And then you bring in a guy like Tom, who, you know, is the best of the best. And instantly, I mean, you have that confidence as a player, that you're going to have this opportunity to, you know, make a deep run in the playoffs and hopefully play in a Super Bowl.
Head to the defensive side of the football now for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before we head over to the other side of the field to talk with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, on the defensive side, I think this is where the Buccaneers hang their hat, and they're going to have to in this game against, if not the most dynamic, one of the most dynamic offenses in NFL history. Talked with Buccaneers defensive end William Golston about this front seven and the Bucs defense as a whole, which seems to me to be vastly underrated going into this game, where the top talk has been all Mahomes, all Brady. Hey, William, a lot of discussion obviously about Tom Brady going into this game, but I feel like there's a lot of folks sleeping on this defense, particularly the front seven of which you are a part. Can you talk about the dynamic that this defense could play in the game? And also, you know, look at David and White. Those guys hit seemingly really hard. And what impact do you think that has on the opposition?
I'm glad that everybody's sleeping and is perfectly fine with us on defense. Just got to be able to, when the lights come on, show what we got to do. As far as everybody else, I know that the guys that are next to me and behind me are totally and perfectly prepared for this game. We're doing everything that we can possibly do to be ready. And it's okay for everybody to sleep. It's nothing wrong with that.
Also talked with Tampa Bay safety Antoine Winfield Jr. Hey, hope all is well. Want to get your take on the Buccaneers defense as a whole. And obviously there's been a lot of talk about Tom Brady, as there should be. But do you feel that, you know, in some ways the defense has been the key for you guys, particularly the known commodity that Brady is with the offense?
Yeah, I mean, the defense is full of guys. Look at our front seven. Our front seven is ridiculous. On the back end, we're young, but we're still out there making plays. So I feel like the defense is – we have a great defense over here.
Let's do the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs now. Patrick Mahomes is the best in the business. I talked with him about his matchup with Tom Brady and what this win, if he gets one, may mean in regards to his legacy. Hey, Patrick, congrats on the second straight Super Bowl. I want to ask you about, you know, the reason that you play the game. You were kind of talking about this a little bit earlier, but do you play the game to be the greatest ever? And obviously looking across the field at Tom, who currently has that mantra, what role do you think this game plays in perhaps your long-term legacy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big question. I mean, for me, I focus on the now, what I can control, and that's going out there and being the best player and the best teammate that I can be on Super Bowl Sunday. And that's going to take great practices during the week, and that's going to take the best effort I could possibly give on Sunday. And it's going to be a great game. With two great teams, and if I leave everything I have on the field for my teammates at the end of the day, I'll be happy.
Also had some fun with Chiefs wide receiver Tyreek Hill. Hey, Tyreek, you're a guy that has such an incredible ability to impact the game, and I'm wondering how you go about putting yourself in the position to have success in each game, in particular the Super Bowl coming up.
Yep. I feel like to be able to be great in situations like this, man, you got to be great all week. You know, whether it's practice, whether it's watching film, you know, or just attacking every day, you know, so that's what I've been doing all year, you know, just working hard, you know, being coachable, being accountable, you know, and I've been successful with it, you know, so I'm gonna continue to do that and do those things, and hopefully I can be successful again in the Super Bowl.
It seems like you're one of, if not the best weapon in the league that can be a game changer. And also, if you guys win this Super Bowl, what does it say about this offense being perhaps the best ever?
Well, my role on the team, man, is just, you know, just make sure all the guys are hydrated when they come back to the bench, man, because Patrick, he does a great job, you know, and making great throws, you know. So when he comes to the sideline, him, Kelsey, and the offensive line, I just bring them those guys water. You know, and then just make sure to encourage those guys and just give those guys, you know, the energy, you know. So that's kind of my role. And what was the second question?
If you guys win on Sunday, how does it go towards cementing you guys as one of the great offenses ever?
Oh, it doesn't cement us anywhere, I feel like. That's our mindset. Like, all of us are still young, so we have a lot of football to play. You know, when that time comes, that's when we'll think about that. But until then, we're going to continue to chase these records, chase these rings, and chase these dreams. You know what I mean.
And in your
this commercial.
And in your role as water boy, which athlete needs the most consumption? Is it Kelsey? Is it Patrick Mahomes? Do you have to give him multiple cups? How does that work?
It's definitely Patrick, because the way that he talks, like, he's always like Pat, like Pat. Patrick's voice sounds like it's cracking, so he needs water to like quench that crack. Like, you get what I'm saying? Like, he needs water to quench that crackiness in his voice. So when he drinks water, he's back to like talking clean to get the plays out. You know what I'm saying? So, Patrick.
Tyrann Mathieu, to me, is such a fun player to watch on the defensive side of the football. He is a playmaker. He is a signal caller. He is huge for the Kansas City Chiefs. So I talked with him as well. I wanted to ask you a little bit about Tom Brady. You mentioned some of his attributes before, and I'm curious what stands out the most in terms of his attributes. And you've affected so many games so far this year with your playmaking ability. How do you go about picking your spots and making plays?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd probably say this, man. He's just so poised, right? And I think this whole season he's been poised, you know, especially with all the noise that they had early on in the season and, you know, him not throwing a ball downfield or hitting those shots. You know, even when he struggles in certain halves of certain games, he always finds a way to put his team, you know, back in it. And so I probably say that's one of the things I admire about him the most, but I also hate it because I'm a defender. And, you know, when you're up by 20 points or three scores and you give him the ball back, you know, he always has a chance to kind of put his team back in it. So, but that's one of the things I, you know, appreciate about him. I think any team that has a good quarterback, you know, has a chance to win, you know, especially when you have a guy like Tom Brady.
Chiefs and Buccaneers in Super Bowl 55 in Tampa, Sunday, around 6:30, the kickoff for that one. You're listening to the Press Pass presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know how the treatment works. Come to the next segment of the program, we do some Celtics and Bruins, then check in on the Red Sox. The final segment of the show today as they said goodbye to Dustin Pedroia and hello to Kike Hernandez and Garrett Richards. This is the Press Pass on KXL. This is the Press Pass here on KXL, presented by Riverbank Community Mental Health. And this segment of the program is brought to you by Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first and has since 1951. If you can't make it to one of their two locations, the Prescription Center will deliver your prescriptions to you free of charge. It's Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Last night looked like it was going to be, let's be honest, a sure loss to the Los Angeles Clippers. If you watched the first and second quarter of that game, knowing there was no Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, It just looked like a game that the Celtics were not going to have success in. Against elite teams this year, outside of the win on opening night against the Bucks, there haven't been any. But the Celtics showed a little something last night, and their depth showed a little something last night. Of course, there's the leadership of Jason Tatum, 34 points in the contest, 7 rebounds, also 4 steals in the game as well. Kemba Walker shooting the ball better, 9 of 19 overall, 24 points, making the game-winning shot late in the contest as well. But to me, it was the depth that won this game. Carson Edwards coming off the bench with 16 points. Robert Williams with 10 points. Grant Williams with 11. Tristan Thompson with 11 as well. Chemi Ojeleye matched up with Kawhi Leonard for the last two Clippers possessions and getting misses in key moments of the game. So Celtics win last night 119-115. Chalk this up as one of those significant wins. And if the Celtics start to make a run here, they're currently at 12-9. They play the Suns tomorrow in Phoenix. I talked with Jason Tatum in the early morning hours after the win over the Clippers.
Hey, Jason, do you see this as being kind of one of the signature wins that could propel the group, given how down you guys were tonight man-wise and the quality of the opponent? And is there something different in terms of what you look for from yourself when Jalen's out?
Yeah, I think this is a good winning aspect, like you said, coming off a loss, down a few guys. But, I think for my time being here, regardless of who we have playing, we always feel like, we gonna give ourselves a chance to win. And there's always next man up mentality. We got a lot of talented guys on this team that work extremely hard, and I know it has to be tough. And they're uncertain about when they're going to play. And, when you get your number called, being ready. And that's extremely tough. So I commend all those guys that, don't necessarily know when they're going to play and come in and make an impact on the game and like they did tonight. So it was a big team win in that aspect. I was proud of those guys.
Also talked with Kemba Walker, who made a big shot late, which put the Celtics up for good.
Hey, Kemba, do you see this as being one of those potential signature wins for the group, given you're down a couple guys, the quality of the opponent, and just for you personally and also for the group to see results late in the game?
Yeah, I think I was definitely a confidence builder. Just because, we started off slow. But, we stuck together throughout the whole game. The energy was great. Communication was great. Our togetherness was just on a whole nother level. So we got to understand that we need each other, especially throughout the rest of the season. Our schedule is not getting no easier. So we got to keep it going.
Pre-game, I talked with Celtics head coach Brad Stevens about the depth and what he has seen from it so far. It's been tested at this point, and they needed a big result. They got one.
Hey, Brad, obviously the COVID situation with Jason and now the injuries have tested your depth this year. What have you noticed about your depth? What have you liked? What have you not liked? What you've seen?
Well, I think every game we just try to go in there and whoever's available play as well as we can with who's there. And, I think it's great opportunities for the guys that are behind some of those guys. And in a lot of ways, it's a reminder to us to just kind of stay the course, right? We're not going to get too high or too low right now as we have, obviously the first month, Kemba not available, now Marcus out, Jalen out, Jason missing time. I think that we just have to try to get as good as we can be, try to create some real reliability off the bench and those other guys. And so that when we're back full, that we can be our best. But, I think that like a lot of players in the league, we've had moments where we've shown ourselves capable, the next step for young players is, being consistent and, part of that is opportunity and they're getting great opportunity right now.
Final question for Coach Tradar.
Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy talked earlier today about what he has in that top line of Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak. Pasta has scored 5 goals in his three games back, and he didn't score the first night. So five goals in the last two games for David Pastrnak. He has scored at opportune times. He has led comebacks. And having that offense there for a team, knowing that there's a guy who can score at any given point in time, it might be just take so much pressure off of everybody else. It's kind of like the David Ortiz effect in the lineup for the Red Sox. If you know that Ortiz is going to come through in the clutch, it allows you to kind of free your mind and to do your thing, knowing that he is there to pick up for you. That's what Pastrnak does for the Bruins, in my view. Here is Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy. The Bees take on the Philadelphia Flyers in the back end of 2-2. Bruins are pretty unbelievable at this point, 7-1-2 in their first 10 games.
A hockey sense, certainly Berge and Marsh have been together a long time, so they read off each other. Pastrnak came in and was a natural fit. I think they're all a threat to pass and all a threat to shoot. And I think that's the danger of defending them. If you overplay one guy's, you know, as the shooter, for example, if people take away, great examples, the overtime goal the other night, you know, Pasta's hot. They want to get in front of him, get it. So they leave the front of the net to front him, and he slides it into to Berge, who gets a couple whacks at it. So I think they're great at identifying the open man. I think they're all a threat to, you know, pass or shoot. And the last part is they're all very strong on the puck. So they can win one-on-one battles, keep plays alive, and then wait for help. And then they will kind of read off each other where the open ice is. So put those three things together. I mean, any player, now you got the three players with, you know, will, skill, ability to finish. You know, it's a handful, and that's typically what you get.
Hey, Bruce, want to ask you about the psychological aspect of having David Pastrnak in your lineup and how having an individual that everybody knows can score two goals like he did in that last game against the Washington Capitals affects your team. I mean, are there pros, cons of that from a psychological perspective?
Well, there's not a lot of cons other than maybe guys just figure, well, Pasta will get hot and he'll do it. He'll carry us. I would say that's the only thing that could go through a player's head. If they're having a tough night, I don't need to push through, you know, the power play or Pasta, you know. And you know, we've got a pretty good group, pretty responsible group. If that feeling sets in, it doesn't last long. I think guys are kind of shake them out of that, and everyone has to do their part. So it's pretty much just pros knowing that a guy like that, and that's one of the reasons, going back to Dan's questions, why we feel we're not out of games, because we have a guy like that that can get hot. So, you know, that, and then secondary scoring underneath that. So that's the advantage, and you know, he wants to score. He gets frustrated. Not frustrated is the wrong word. He gets more determined if he doesn't, you know, if he has some looks and he's off net, like that Monday, or sorry, Saturday, he was a little off net with some of his chances. He knew it. And he bared down yesterday and hit the net, and as a result got two. So that's the other advantage of with him, is he has a mindset as he wants to score goals. He wants to get available. He wants to work hard. He wants to shoot the puck to get on the score sheet, because he knows it helps us win. So, like I said, it's predominantly all good things when you have a guy like him in the lineup.
Charlie McAvoy has had a standout year for the Boston Bruins, and that was really evidenced on Saturday night in the come-from-behind game against the Capitals. Ended up losing in overtime. But McAvoy was huge in that contest. I talked with Brad Marchand about how McAvoy is helping the Bruins in the offensive zone. Charlie McAvoy on the assist on your goal, which put you within one, and then on the equalizer to force overtime. Is that what you're looking for from him in terms of being able to complement what you're doing up front? And how good can this team be if he continues to contribute this way offensively?
Yeah, he's such a dynamic player. He's so good at transporting the puck. He's strong on it down low in our zone and breaking it out. And you know, he's quick to jump up in the play. So when he gets his offensive touch going in the ozone, and he's able to wheel around and he's making the plays that he has been recently, it's fun to watch. I mean, he's going to be a dominant player in this league for a long time. And, you know, we need that owner. We need him to take the next step. And you know, especially with losing Z and Krug, you know, we need guys to step up and take over those roles, and he's doing that right now. He's been great. You know, we need that to continue.
Here's McAvoy himself about playing against Zdeno Chara for the first and second time in the 2-2 against the Capitals. Hey, Charlie, just the reality of seeing Z tonight and kind of the reality versus the expectations of what you thought things were going to be like, seeing him in a different uniform, competing against him?
Yeah, you know, obviously the build up to it, I was excited to kind of see him, and then, you know, once the pucks drop, it's hockey. It moves very fast. There's not really a chance to slow down and, you know, and take it in. So the game moves quick. I wasn't able to talk to him or anything like that, but you know, happy to see him playing in the NHL and doing so well.
Bruins gonna head out to Lake Tahoe in a couple weeks, as we've seen the outdoor games take place, but they've been in stadiums and things of that nature. This is gonna have one of the most picturesque backdrops you've seen, and to me, there is nothing more COVID than this event, because, you know, COVID for many, particularly here in New Hampshire, has been about reconnecting with nature, getting out there, hiking, biking, kayaking, skating, you know, whatever the case may be. So that was a pretty cool event. Brad Marchand and James Van Riemsdyk here. Van Riemsdyk with the Flyers, the former UNH guy. Here is my conversation with the two of them. This is for Brad and JVR. COVID's so much been about kind of reestablishing with being outdoors and that type of a thing. Does that kind of tie into this as well, where people have hockey comes from the pond and we have all kind of re-experienced being outdoors, and it seems like it's kind of a natural fit in that realm as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously, with everything that's going on, everyone's trying to find the best way to kind of stay sane and do the things that they love to do. You know, fortunately, we're allowed to play right now, and we are able to continue to play hockey and do our jobs. And, you know, it does kind of tie it all together, being able to have these games play right now, but also to do it outside. I mean, I think the outdoor games are something we all look forward to every year. They're a lot of fun. Guys get excited about them. They're probably you know, one of the guys' favorite memories when they play is to be able to play in these games. So to still be able to make it happen and to find a unique scenario where, you know, we don't have fans, but it could still be special being out in Lake Tahoe and having that scenery and that view, and having a place like that, it's pretty special. So it's great that they're able to tie it all together, you know, and still make it happen. The fans are going to love to watch it. We're going to love to play in it, and it should be fun.
Yeah, I think Brad said it pretty perfectly, but obviously these events are always super memorable, and it's nice that we're able to still do something like this. And like he said, I think it fits perfectly for what everyone's going through as far as in the world and keeping things safe and being outside and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a great scene.
As you guys prepare for this, I'm curious as to what your thoughts have been on how often you've been playing the same team so far, the 2-2 matchups. You've seen each other, obviously, you know, a couple times already. And do you expect there to be kind of a rivalry that's built at that point in time, given the fact that you're playing each other so consistently? Let's go for Brad.
Yeah, I like the 2-2 scenario where we play the same team a couple of times. It has a little bit more of a playoff feel to it. You're able to feel the team out the first game and then scout them a little bit and find their tendencies out for the second game. So, you know, you're kind of adapting to their systems and everything a little bit more than maybe you do in the regular season in that second game. So, and it's also nice to be able to have a couple of days where you're not traveling and relax in the same city. So I've liked the setup so far. You know, there's potential that maybe there's a little bit of a rivalry, but there's still regular season games. They have a much different feel than maybe a playoff series would. You know, that's typically where you build those big rivalries that, you know, people live for during the playoffs. You know, so, I mean, during the regular season nowadays, there's not that much bad blood that happens. Again, typically what happens in those rivalries, there's big fights or big hits or, you know, they don't have that stuff in hockey anymore. You know, they've clamped down on it too much. So it's going to be another fun game, another regular season game. You know, obviously there's history between the Bruins and the Flyers, but, you know, it's another game.
Do some Celtics now. Celtics at 11-9. They are out in L.A., take on the Clippers on Friday, and then they take on the Suns in Phoenix on Sunday before wrapping up their West Coast swing against the Utah Jazz. And Celtics have been struggling. They're dealing with injuries right now, some significant problems in their backcourt, and they're also not closing out games late. So depth issues, some chemistry issues with their top three players, and Marcus Smart now out as well. So some problems for the Boston Celtics. Their defense has gotten a little bit better as of late, but that continues to be something that's bothering the team. And, you know, I was thinking about some of the high scoring aspects of the game right now and how defense is not quite, what it needs to be. And I was wondering about the fan impact on that. You know, when there's no fans there, I feel like probably a little easier for the offense to get in a flow. And for the defense, so many times I feel like, the crowd kind of drives that defensive intensity. A lot of anecdotal stuff there, but I wanted to get the feelings of Celtics head coach Brad Stevens about it. Hey, Brett, hope all is well with you. You're talking the other day about fans and the fans not being in attendance and what that's meant. I'm curious as to if you've seen anything substantive in how not having fans has, affected the game on either end of the floor. Has there been any effect, do you think, on the play?
That's a good question. I don't know that there's probably people that have dove into the numbers on that between now and the bubble and figured out what effect that might have on individuals or teams. I'd say it'd be more individual based. I'm sure there are guys that are able perform better without, some that perform better with. But I have not seen anything that would suggest there's a difference in level per se. I certainly felt like in the bubble, as the games got into the playoffs, that was as high a level basketball as I'd ever been around. So I don't think I have a good answer for you on that one.
Game of the week for the Celtics was Saturday night against the Los Angeles Lakers. They lost that contest at home as Kemba Walker missed a short jump shot off the left side that would have won it for the Cs. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown both really good in that contest. They had 58 points combined. Tatum 30, Jaylen 28 to outscore LeBron and AD 58-48. Here is Tatum. Jason, did you view tonight as being an opportunity to put yourself side by side with the champs to kind of evaluate where you're at? And if so, what did you find out?
Yeah. I guess you could say that, just knowing that they are defending champs and the history between the two organizations. We knew it was going to be a hard fought game. And obviously we felt like we could have did some things better, but we still gave ourselves the opportunity, the chance to win the game. And that's all you can ask for.
Kemba talked with us the other day about how he was going to find his way and he wanted you and Jaylen, just kind of continue to do your thing. Do you feel like you need to do anything to create a level of comfort for him within the offense at this point?
I think so. I feel like we just need to look for him more, get him more involved. Obviously coming back from, rehabbing, and then being on minute restriction, it's tough. Like, just trying to find your rhythm and not playing your normal minutes. Anybody that's played this sport, played basketball, can know how tough it is. So I think, we just need to do a better job of, getting him involved, while he's out there and looking for him. He's one of the best players in the league. And, once he finds his rhythm, we're going to be clicking on all seven.
Here's Jaylen Brown. Hey, Jaylen, just interested in your general thoughts on this one. Seems like you guys defended much better. You got stops down the stretch. Your thoughts overall on the loss to the Lakers?
I think we played, pretty good basketball majority of the game. We just came up short. At the end, we got a look that we would love to get every single time we're in that position. And it didn't fall tonight, but it'll fall next time.
I talked with Daniel Theis as the Celtics now dealing without Marcus Smart in a circumstance where their defense has been a bit of a challenge. I talked with Theis about that.
Hey, Daniel, obviously there's never a good time to lose a guy like Marcus Smart, but considering, you know, the difficulties with sustained defensive intensity, is this kind of a rallying cry that all you guys need to step up a little bit more in his absence? And has that been something that's been missing in your view on the defensive end, that sustained 48-minute effort?
It's a challenge that our best defensive player is out, so then now everybody can take a challenge. We got to step up as a team, and maybe, like you said, he's missing, but now other guys can show. Basically, everybody on our team, we got to prove and show that we are a capable defensive team. Like, we've been struggling with defense basically all season. So now it's time to show that we can play defense, and when Marcus gets back, we can get better on the defensive end again.
That is Daniel Theis. This is the Press Pass on KXL. Up next, we do some Red Sox. Dustin Pedroia calling it a career. I talk with PD. Do some baseball now as the Red Sox welcome two free agents and said goodbye to a legend whose number 15 should be retired by the team and hang alongside teammate David Ortiz and the other Red Sox legend honored out there in right field on the facade. Pedroia, borderline Hall of Famer, but certainly the heart and soul of a Red Sox team that won championships in 2007 and 2013 and played a role as a mentor to the 2018 club. After dealing with a significant knee injury that led to his career coming to a close, played only three games in 2018, nine total in 18 and 19. And Pedroia was a gamer. He was the guy that you want to point your kid toward and say, that is how you play the game of baseball. But, you know, as a result of the wear and tear that took on his body, he ended up not being really able to play beyond the age of 33. In terms of batting average, .299 for the career for Dustin Pedroia, just a shade under 300. He was a four-time All-Star, won an MVP in 2008, and also, you know, of course, won those World Series championships. A Gold Glover as well, four times, one of the best I've ever seen to play the second base position. Ended up with 1,805 hits, 140 home runs. Again, that batting average at .299. Again, a borderline Hall of Famer. That's where Dustin Pedroia is at. We'll see if, in fact, he does find his way to Cooperstown down the road, but certainly one of the great all-time Red Sox. I talked with him upon his retirement. Hey, Dustin, congrats on a great career. Wanted to ask you how much, you know, introspection there's been on all these different topics over the last couple of years. It seems like you've thought out a lot of, you know, these things, and also being away from the game, you were a guy that loved the game so much, was there early, as you mentioned before, and the entirety of your focus and being was on, you know, each night. Has that been harder or easier to be away from the game than maybe you expected when thinking about walking away? Thanks.
I think I was away, but I was always there, you know, in communication with a lot of people. There was, you know, from that last January on, I mean, there was, I would break down, you know, it was tough. You know, I didn't try to show it with my wife or kids. You know, I just go in the bathroom and kind of chill for a little bit and break down, because it's hard when your entire life, when I was in Little League, I would get ready at 5 a.m. for a noon game. Like, I did this my entire life, and to have it just stop, and then you fight to get it back, you know, it's tough. But you know, everybody that was around me knows that how hard I worked to try to get back, and you know, that's enough for me. You know, now I just want to be healthy. I want to impact, you know, the younger generation with the stories I have and the things that I've gone through and the adversity that I've dealt with. That's what I'm supposed to do now. And, you know, I look forward to it.
So who's going to play second base this year for the Red Sox? It looks like that's going to be Kike Hernandez, who can play pretty much every position outside of pitcher and catcher. He comes over from the Dodgers, who won the World Series last year. And he looks to be a significant contributor to 2021 Boston Red Sox. Kike, what is your sense about how good the Red Sox are going to be this year? What type of a club they're going to be coming off of last season, and how much did that play into your decision-making process?
I when I went into free agency, I went in looking for an opportunity to get an everyday role, but at the same time, I've been a part of a postseason team the last 6 years, and I didn't really want to. I'm not ready to go to to a mediocre team, and that is partly why I chose the Red Sox. You look at this team on paper, and when this team is healthy, they're a pretty solid team. There's a lot of really, really good baseball players, and I love the fact that people are kind of counting the Red Sox out of there, because it keeps us quiet coming in, and I think this team has got a lot of potential. And I think last year was a little bit of a tough year for them. I didn't really get to watch because I was on the West Coast and I was playing for another team, but the team has a lot of really good players, and partly why I wanted a 2-year deal instead of one. It's just I get invested in the teams and my teammates, and I also know how much expectations this fan base and this city has on their teams, and I know that they're not going to be okay with going a multiple year playoff drought. So I know that when we get Chris back from getting healthy and stuff, and I know that this team is going to be up there contending again. So I would say that's why I chose the Red Sox.
You mentioned that your plan was to be the everyday second baseman. Do you see that as being your strongest position in the field?
I would say so. I don't know what I honestly don't really know what the metrics are. I know that I've heard that I grade really well in center field and in left field, but I grew up a shortstop. I grew up an infielder, so playing infield for me is a lot more fun than playing the outfield. Outfield can get a little boring sometimes, especially when there's no fans in the stands. But I would say that ideally for me, I would like to stay up the middle of the infield, but I think that me as a second baseman is probably my best position, because I have a pretty strong arm for a second baseman, so I can make some plays that guys with like average arms sometimes can't make. So I pride myself in my defense everywhere, but if I had to say that which one is my best, I'd probably say second base.
Kike Hernandez right there at the age of 29. He's not a guy that has really played a full season in the big league. He's been a utility guy. He has hit for his career only 240, coming off a 230 season last year. Had his best year in 2018, which he hit 21 home runs, 52 RBI, and a 256 batting average. It's been his high watermark in the big leagues, playing 145 games. Also joining the Red Sox, Garrett Richards, good right-hand pitcher, rotational depth type of guy, and I talked with him as well. Garrett, what are your impressions of the Red Sox rotation going into 2021, and how do you see yourself fitting into it?
I think it's solid. And then when you get Chris Sale back, I mean, that's a huge addition to any rotation. But Nathan Eovaldi, I mean, plus stuff. I mean, that guy's so much fun to watch. Perez just signed back. I played in the minor leagues against him. An incredible arm. I think it's just going to be it's going to be a chance for us to go out and pitch. I know that we're going to score runs. That's historic in Boston. I feel like every time I've ever played Boston, there hasn't been any less than 5 runs scored. I don't know. It's going to be fun. I'm excited just to get out there and play. But I'm also excited to get there with my teammates and start building relationships. Also, I think a good rotation is one that enjoys being around each other and enjoys talking about the game a lot. So I'm excited to start picking some brains. I think that's kind of something everybody looks forward to do when you get to spring training.
Red Sox getting set for spring training as that starts in just about 2 weeks. Pitchers and catchers report down to Fort Myers in the Red Sox spring training, and the 2021 season will begin. Thanks so much for joining us for the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Press Pass has been presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health.